If the doors of perception were cleansed, everything would appear to man as it is, infinite. A quote by William Blake. What is perception? That's a profound question, which we will answer in this episode very conclusively. By this question, what we mean is not only what is perception, but what is the relationship between perception, the mind, the brain, consciousness, and reality? How is it that perception can happen at all? This is a very deep philosophical question that Western philosophers and scientists have been pondering literally for thousands of years and still struggle with today. And I've been racking my mind over this question for probably 2 decades until I finally resolved it around 6 months ago during my 30-day solo meditation retreat. Now, that retreat didn't quite go fully to plan. I only completed half of it, 14 days. But nevertheless, in those 14 days that I did complete, I had some pretty epic epiphanies. And one of the things that I discovered is that I discovered the answer to this question. And I discovered that perception actually does not exist. It's an illusion. And that was one of the deepest mindfucks of my life. And I've had many mindfucks, which I've shared with you. But this one in particular was quite astounding. And so I want to go a little bit into the mechanics of how it is that we get perception so wrong. Why is perception so tricky? Why do so few people understand it? There are many philosophers and academics and neuroscientists right now in top-notch universities who are trying to understand this problem, and they still aren't getting it because of how tricky it is. But we will explain it for you here today. And that's not because I'm arrogant. It's not because I have some kind of special knowledge that I think that I'm above everybody else, that I know something that other people don't know. It's not that. It's just that this problem, which is otherwise known as the mind-body problem, which we will resolve today, this problem has been resolved for over 5,000 years. It was resolved by saints and sages. But the problem is that in modern Western culture, modern science doesn't really go to these ancient sources to study them and to do the practices to realize what they realized 5,000 years ago and even before that. So that's a shame. And that's what we're going to correct here today. So my explanation is going to try to address this question from a sort of a very modern 21st century perspective. For modern materialists. So I'm making a pretty big claim here. I'm saying that perception does not exist, and you should be rightly skeptical about what it is exactly that I'm saying there. Perception does not exist. I mean, am I contradicting all the stuff that you're experiencing right this very moment? Well, obviously I can't be, but at the same time, then what am I talking about? I promise you, though, that what I'm talking about is not merely a word game or not merely some philosophy, but something very significant, something life-transforming, if you stay with me and really grasp what I'm saying here. Something is being pointed to that's a little bit tricky to grasp, but with some luck today, with some examples and metaphors and even some demonstrations that I'll show you, some props that I brought, it'll be a little bit easier for you to understand. So, perception, contrary to what most people are taught, is not a biological or a neurological process. Perception doesn't actually occur, but when I say that, I don't mean what you think I mean. Because obviously the raw data of perception is undeniable. So I'm not denying colors, I'm not denying that you see shapes, I'm not denying that you hear sounds. So then what am I really saying? Well, we're going to get into that in a second, but first let's really clarify what I mean by the word perception. What are we really talking about? So bring it into your direct experience, perception, and we're not just going to be using the word perception. We're going to be talking about experience or the visual field. All of these words and labels are going to be synonymous, basically interchangeable for us here. So when I'm talking about the visual field, of course, that's only part of perception. There's also the auditory field and your body sensations, all that. That's part of experience. That's part of perception. But I'm going to focus on the visual field today, because if you can grasp the visual field, then all the other perceptual fields you'll be able to make sense of just as well. So what I mean by perception or experience is this sensory bubble that you are in. Have you noticed that you're inside this sensory bubble? Whatever room you're sitting in, wherever you are, indoors, outdoors, doesn't matter. You're basically encased in this bubble of perceptions. And this is how you interact with reality. Right? You know, humans are very visual creatures, so for us, it's mostly this visual bubble. But of course, there's sort of all the auditory sounds you hear and all that, but it's all basically happening in this bubble. It's almost as though you're living your entire life in this snow globe or this the inside of a Christmas ornament, this round Christmas ornament. That's how I like to conceive of it in my mind, which is painted from the inside, not from the outside. And so all you see is the inner walls of this Christmas ornament. So every time that I'm using the word perception or experience or visual field, that's what I'm talking about. And I want you to become aware of that right now. Look around you and notice that what you're in right now is this perceptual bubble. And that's what we're going to be talking about this entire time here in this episode. So what you have to understand, though, about the word perception and also experience is that these are very sneaky words. Very sneaky. They carry in a hidden metaphysics, because perception and experience, the way that they're used in language, they imply a subject and an object, duality. And this is a very important point that a lot of people overlook. So it doesn't make sense in our language or any human language to say that there's a perception or an experience, but that nobody is having it. So this is what I mean by subject-object. So the subject would be like me, Leo, and the object would be, let's say, the color red that I see on the wall over there. So the color is the subject, is the object, I'm the subject, and so I am perceiving that color, we would say, like that. So by definition, really, perception and experience requires a subject or someone who is having the experience. And so if I just told you one day that there's a free-floating experience somewhere out in the universe, like the color red is just floating around somewhere, that wouldn't make sense to you. Say something is wrong with you, something's wrong with your head, Leo, because you can't just have the color red floating around in the universe. Someone has to be perceiving it, because that's the implicit metaphysics that comes with thinking about perceptions and experiences. So now I want you to kind of open up your mind a little bit more and think about what does an experience or perception look like when we remove the subject or the owner of the perception or the experience? So try to imagine like the color red literally just kind of floating out in the vacuum of empty space. Not something that's happening to you. You're not seeing it. You're not experiencing it, but it's there. So what would that be? Really, what we're doing is we're stripping the object of the subject. We're taking away the subject. Or another way you can think of it is that we're collapsing the subject and object together, such that that thing is just being out there without a creature or an entity or a sentient being looking at it and experiencing it. Would you still call that thing an experience or a perception, if that was even possible? Well, on the one hand, you might be tempted to say that, yes, it's still a perception. It's still basically an experience, Leo. It's just that it's not occurring to anybody. But then again, that really changes what you think an experience or a perception really is, if it can be experienced or perceived without an experiencer or a perceiver. That sort of redefines, radically redefines what those terms mean. And not just in a sort of a word gamey kind of way. Something very significantly different is happening now. So here's what I want you to consider, is that if this could happen, the raw data, let's say, of this experience or perception would still stay exactly the same. So colors would still stay the same, shapes, they wouldn't change. The color red would still be the color red. But what would happen is a radical recontextualization such that this raw data of red or whatever it is no longer yours and is no longer a thing that is happening to you. And that's very, very significant. It's been depersonalized, you might say. And along with that, it's also no longer biological. It's no longer something that is related to your brain or to your mind. And it's no longer even a part of your life. Because all of that assumes a you or a subject that is part of this relationship with the object. It's just a pure object, we might say. Or another way to say it is that we removed all the personal selfhood out of this thing, and we've just turned it into a universal experience. So you might think of it as the universe. Who is experiencing this color red out in a vacuum? The universe. Not you, not some other creature, not some other person, but the universe. But the trick here is that you don't want to think of the universe as a human or a person or even as a sentient thing. It's just that that object is just like floating out there, sort of the way that you might imagine, for example, that an object might have been floating out in a vacuum of empty space billions of years ago, long before there were humans, long before there was even a planet Earth, long before there were any planets in the entire universe. There were no sentient creatures of any kind, no biological life anywhere in the universe. And yet, we still think that there were like asteroids, planets forming, stars, stardust, nebulas, supernovas and black holes and stuff like that, right? So you might kind of wonder like, well, who was perceiving those? Obviously nobody. There was nobody there to perceive them. And yet you still believe that those objects were out there and that they existed. So I want you now to try to imagine an object that exists all by itself in an empty universe with no one perceiving it. What might that be like? How would the universe even know or register that this object is there? This is a very tricky and deep problem, you see. How does the universe even know itself? Like, if an asteroid existed 10 billion years ago, so did the universe kind of have a record? Like, does the universe have a database of all the asteroids and it kind of knows what asteroids are inside of it? Well, you could think of it that way, but still, it's not quite right, because what does it mean for the universe? Like, so if this database exists, is there somebody in the universe, like some entity, looking at the database, seeing the database, perceiving the database? No, you can't quite say that, because we're saying that the universe hasn't evolved yet to the point where there are sentient creatures. So you're sort of in this weird situation where you have to say that there is this kind of database, but yet nobody knows about it. So what does it even mean to say that there is a database? Because what we mean when we say that something is we really mean that we're perceiving it. Someone is perceiving it. So this sort of gets us into some very deep metaphysical waters that are tricky to navigate. But let's back up a step and let's kind of sort of go back to the beginning. Let's simplify this conversation and let me explain to you what your current conception of reality is. The conception which gets you confused about what perception is. So, number one, what you believe is that there is an objective external material world and that this world exists independently of you, right? That's what 99.9% of people believe. Number two is that there are two kinds of objects in this world. There are dumb objects like rocks, cars, buildings, and planets. And then there are sentient creatures like humans, cats, dogs, and apes. Number three, you believe that these sentient objects, sentient creatures, that they perceive the external world. And that every creature has this perceptual field or bubble that is their perception of the external world. Number five, you believe that you were born into the world as one of these biological sentient creatures. You believe that that's what you are. And number six, you believe that the perceptual field that you have as one of these creatures is inside of the brain or is produced by the brain, which is itself a dumb object, sort of like a rock, which exists as part of the external world. And you would say, well, we don't know exactly how this dumb object called a brain can produce this perceptual bubble field, but nevertheless, obviously it does, because here it is. So that's the conventional model. This is the sort of scientific, materialistic model that everybody follows. Even religious people still basically buy into this model. So what I realized during my meditation retreat is that all of this is an illusion created by the ego. That's not actually how it works. Here's how it actually works. Number one, there is no objective external material world. Only one thing exists in all of existence, and that is one universal field of consciousness. That's what everything you've ever interacted with has been, is this one universal field of consciousness. Number two, you did not come into existence as an object, not as a dumb object, nor as one of these sentient creatures. That's an illusion. Actually, you were born as an idea. Follow me here. This is very mind-warping. You're not an object. You're an idea. You, right there, that thing that thinks it's a physical object, you're actually an idea. Now you'll say, Leo, but no, I'm a physical object. I can't be an idea. That's silly. How could I be an idea when look, I'm physical. Leo, I'm physical. Yeah, that's the idea that you're a physical object. You're not actually a physical object. You're the idea that you're a physical object. You following this? It gets a little weirder still. Number three, this idea of you, when it spawned into being, into existence, it took ownership of this field of consciousness that exists and misinterpreted it as its own perceptions. And here we are. So you are sitting here right now listening to me, and you find yourself in this bubble, and you believe that this bubble is yours. You believe that it's you. You actually believe that this is comprising your life. Like if this bubble was extinguished, that's what you imagine death is. Right? Is the ending of this bubble, the cessation of this bubble. Lights out. The bubble is gone. And what you imagine your birth was the instantiation of this bubble. And what I'm telling you is that that's not the case. What actually happened is that there was this field stretches out to infinity, and then one day, this field had an idea. And the idea was that, oh, this field is mine and this is my life. And so what you did is you've actually constructed the ego when it came into existence. It constructed out of this field, this sense of this is me, this sense of selfhood. And it took ownership of it. And then it convinced itself that, well, if this is me and this is my life and this is what's happening, then I must be perceiving some external world out there behind the scenes somewhere. And this is, these are my perceptions of that external world behind the scenes somewhere, that external objective material world, which, of course, you've never encountered because all you ever encounter is this perceptual bubble that you're in. And so literally, your sense of selfhood has distorted this non-personal field and has made it personal for you, and you've actually constructed your own life out of it. You've sort of carved your own life out of this giant block of stone. And you have confused it with yourself. And this is where the idea of perception comes in. But of course, there's really no such thing as perception. In the same way that when, let's say, you're a child and you're given a toy and you really are attached to this toy, you start to actually believe that this is my toy. Now, of course, when you were given the toy, nothing changed about the toy. The toy, before it was your toy, it was just a toy. Nobody owned it. You didn't own it. It was just an object floating around the universe. They gave it to you. You got attached to it. And now you call it my toy. Mine. It's mine. But of course, you created that. Nothing about the toy changes when you call it my toy. Except it is significant to realize that this toy is not really mine and that I'm creating the idea that it's mine. You see? So that's why what we're talking about here is not merely a word game. Because it does matter if the child is deluded and really believes that he owns this toy, that ownership is some sort of objective property of the universe rather than a projection of his own mind. Right? And so that's what I'm trying to get you to realize here, is that this belief you have that this bubble of perception is yours, it's part of your biological being, the creature that you are, that this is just like that child buying into that toy. So this sort of co-opting of this field of consciousness by your ego happens so seamlessly that you just took it as a physical fact. And you just completely bought into the idea that you're a biological sentient creature. And your parents reinforced this idea inside of you when you were young because, well, they also bought into this idea and they weren't very conscious. And they reinforced this idea that you are a sentient creature. And they told you that other sentient creatures exist, like birds and dogs and cows and cats and all of this, other humans. And you just started to believe that, oh yeah, all these other things out there are also sentient creatures like me. But really what happened is that you were carved out of the universal field of consciousness like a negative sculpture. And I want to show you an image here of a negative sculpture so you understand what that looks like. You see, this rectangle, at first glance, it seems like it's there, it's real, and it exists. But that's only because of how it's been carved out by all the surrounding material. And so that's what you are. You are not an object that came into existence. Rather, you are the whole that was sort of carved out of this field of consciousness. You see? And so what you believe death is the dissolution of this structure, which will break apart this rectangle, if you're the rectangle in this analogy. See? But that rectangle isn't really real. It's just like a negative space. And so that's what you are. You are just sort of like a negative space within this bubble of what we're calling perception. But if we remove the you from this bubble of perception, what do we have left? The perceptions don't change per se. The raw data of the perceptions don't change. So the colors are still there. The shapes are still there. The sounds are still there. All of that is there. The only thing we're removing is the you. And you might at first think, well, that's not very significant. But think about it a little bit deeper. It's extremely significant. Because what we're saying here is that these perceptions are not happening to a biological creature. These perceptions are just floating out in the vacuum of empty space, you might say. Are you getting this? It's pretty twisted, but actually also it's very, very simple. Actually, it's your models, the model that I showed you before, it's that model that you have, the conventional model, that's what's really twisted. What I'm explaining now is actually very simple. The only reason it seems twisted is because it's so counterintuitive and it's so weird. It seems so foreign. It seems like magic, or it seems like it's just impossible, or it seems like it's some sort of science fiction story. So it seems very radical. And it is. It's very, very radical. We're talking about a radical recontextualization of everything you've ever encountered in your life. You see? So as I talked about in my understanding recontextualization episode, make sure you go watch that one. That was rather profound and important for understanding what I'm talking about here. When I use the word recontextualization, we are reinterpreting how you've been interpreting all of the raw data of reality your entire life. You have been mistaking that for perceptions of a biological creature organism that you think you are. And now what I'm saying is that there never was such a biological creature organism. That was an illusion. It was this sort of negative space that you bought into and thought was real. So you can think of what we're talking about here in two different ways. And this, of course, again, is non-duality. Non-duality means that all boundaries and dualities and categories must collapse. So, of course, you must expect that the duality between subject and object must ultimately collapse. But you can think of that in two ways. You can think that the object disappears and only the subject remains, or you can think of the subject disappears and only the object remains. So what that means in this example is that you can think of it as, what I'm saying is that it's as though the external world is not real and never actually existed. So that external material objective world that you thought was out there behind your perceptions, causing your perceptions, what we're saying here is that there's no such thing. It never existed. Another way to say that is to say that appearance is reality. There's nothing more to reality than appearance. So that's sort of one side of this coin. But actually, there's sort of a rather more profound way to think about it, which is actually the exact opposite way, which is not to eliminate the external world, but rather to eliminate the internal world. You know, because if we eliminate the external world, then all you might think there is just the internal world, just appearances. And appearances we think of as the internal world. But now think of it the other way, the second way. You can think of it as, imagine that the internal world is not real and never existed. And that all there ever was the external world. But you have mistaken the external world for the internal world. And so now we're reinterpreting it and putting it in its proper place such that what you thought was the internal world, all of this of all these colors and sensations, right? This is what I mean by the internal world. You've thought about this as being the internal world because, you know, of course, these we call these by definition subjective. We say that, well, certain people can be colorblind, so they'll see a certain color, but then another person won't see that same color. Or, you know, maybe like a dog, they say, has black and white vision. Dog can't see in color. So you would think that, well, if a dog is looking at that flower, he's seeing it in black and white. And when I'm looking at the flower, I'm seeing red and yellow and blue and green and all these other colors. So we're thinking that these are like, you know, our individual bubbles and that these are subjective internal worlds that biological creatures create using their brains. But no. What I'm saying now is that forget all that. There never was an internal world. What you thought was the internal world is actually the external world. So what this means is that the external world, we're changing really kind of like the definition of what the external world means here. The external world is not something behind the scenes that is hidden, that you never get to interact with. It's the exact opposite. The internal world is completely open to you and not hidden from you at all. Now, at first glance, you might say, well, Leo, these are like polar opposites ways of thinking about reality. Which way is correct? But actually, they're identical. They're identical. It's just different ways of looking at it, different perspectives. Notice that in both of these examples, the raw data doesn't change. The colors all stay the same. The shapes stay the same. The sounds stay the same. The feelings in the body stay the same. All that's changing is how you're interpreting all of that. And that's extremely significant. That's life-changing stuff. Don't think of interpretation as just some, it's just some interesting philosophical mumbo-jumbo. No. Interpretation is everything here, because now what I want you to imagine is that as you're sitting here right now, imagine being able to reinterpret your very experience that's happening right now, all the colors and sounds and sights. Imagine reinterpreting that so radically that you actually cease to exist. You reinterpret yourself out of existence because you're removing the subject. What you thought was an experience or a perception where there was you back here, the subject, and the object out there, that you back here and the subject, that just gets completely eliminated like it never even existed. That's that empty rectangle from the negative space. That gets eliminated. And now all that you see is you just see the material, the substrate that was carving out that negative square or rectangle. See? So literally, if you're able to accomplish this, you reinterpret yourself out of existence. And that's pretty radical. It's pretty radical. Because then you no longer think of this, everything that's going on here, as your life. It stops being personal. It's no longer your life. It's no longer your perceptions. What is it? It's been universalized. This is universal. It's being rather than perception. And that's one of the key things I want you to take away from this episode. The difference between experience, perception, which are the same, and being, which is different. I use the word being sometimes in my various talks, but people don't really register what being is. And they can't because they don't understand what perception is. So that's why this episode is so important, because it draws the distinction between perception and being. So the definition of being is perception minus the ego, or experience minus the ego is being. And another way to phrase it is that what perception is being plus ego. So when we take experience and we separate off the subject and we kill the subject and all we have is the object, that's being. That is like when you were imagining an object or the color red just floating out in the middle of empty space. Like an asteroid that existed 10 billion years ago before there were any sentient creatures in the universe. That was being, because there was no subject there. And then conventionally, what you've been experiencing your whole life is perception or experience, which is an illusion. Because really, perception or experience really is nothing but being. You see, there is no difference between being and perception other than the way that you interpret it or rather the way you misinterpret it. So perception and experience is actually, technically speaking, a misinterpretation of being. And this misinterpretation happens because the ego comes in there and it takes ownership over being. And it says, me, mine, this is all mine, this is all happening to me, this is my life, mine, 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 mine. And when that happens, you get experience or perception. And if you stop doing that, if you train your mind to undo that, then you will decontextualize perception and experience, and it will go back to just being being. But of course, that means that you're going to be dead. There's not going to be a you anymore. There's going to be being, but there's not going to be a you. So just to be very clear, what this means is that, again, that doesn't mean that these colors and shapes and sounds that you hear, that they will change. They will still be here, but there will not be a you who is hearing them or who is experiencing them. And that's a pretty radical change in perception. Very radical. So I have a little analogy here that I like to use to think about how this unified field of consciousness works. And here I got a little prop for you. It's a sponge. So what's cool about a sponge, of course, as you know, and as you can see here, is that it's got all these tiny little bubbles in it. They don't actually look like complete bubbles because we've actually sliced through them such that you're actually seeing like half bubbles. But inside, you can use your mind's eye to imagine that. Actually, inside the sponge, deep in there, where we haven't sliced through, there are entire, complete, self-contained bubbles. And so what this sponge represents, it represents all of reality or all of existence. This is everything that ever existed or ever will exist right here. This is that one unified field of consciousness that I'm talking about. This is everything you've ever experienced and a lot more. Because what you are in this analogy is you are one of these bubbles. So imagine if you could kind of like look through one of those bubbles. What do you see? Well, you only see the back of the bubble there, right? Like this. And like if you're looking through it, you just see the back of the bubble like this. You're looking through this way. And so that's like your whole life. You've lived your whole life as that bubble. And here you're living it right now. This very moment that's happening right now, the room that you're sitting in, wherever you are, that's you inside of this bubble. Now, what you've believed your whole life is you've believed that, yes, there is this bubble, but you've also believed that there's something beyond the bubble, some objective material external reality beyond the bubble. And you've also believed that this bubble is happening to some kind of object, like there's like a brain somewhere in the external world back there, or there's some kind of biological creature who is experiencing this bubble. But what you can see from this analogy and why we're talking about it is that there's no subject. There's only the bubble. There's only the object. This entire sponge is just free-floating out in the vacuum of empty space, you might say. And now you might wonder, well, Leo, but who's experiencing, who's perceiving this sponge? And of course, that's the mindfuck of it, is that the answer is nobody. There's nobody to perceive the sponge. The sponge just is. That's what we mean by being. Being is just a thing that just is without anybody looking at it. That doesn't necessarily change how it looks. It just changes what you understand looking to be. And it eliminates you from the equation. It depersonalizes everything. See? Now, it's still a bit inaccurate even to say that this sponge is just floating out in the vacuum of empty space. Because actually, time and space, this sponge does not occur within time and space. I mean, it does here because we're limited to that right now. But if we're going to take this as the analogy for all of reality, time and space is happening inside the sponge. the sponge is actually itself not constrained or limited to time and space, nor is it constrained or limited by physical or logical laws. Because all of those physical and logical laws, as you know them, that's happening inside of these various bubbles. In fact, you could have different bubbles with different logical laws, different timelines, different spatial dimensions, and so forth. You can have like four-dimensional bubbles, five-dimensional bubbles, and anything else you can imagine. This sponge itself is actually infinite. So, of course, even though here, right now, I'm only presenting it to you as a three-dimensional object, in the analogy, in the full analogy that I'm trying to get across to you, imagine that this sponge, it doesn't actually have a shape. It extends this way and this way and this way, up and down and in every direction. And of course, not just in three dimensions, but an infinite number of dimensions. So if you imagine that, of course, if you did that now, the sponge becomes infinite and it doesn't even have a shape anymore. You can't think of it as being round or square or anything. It just, it literally takes up everything. It's total. It's infinite. That's what infinite means. And you are just one of these tiny little bubbles in this giant thing. And your mom, your dad, your cat, your dog, your boss, your brother, your sister, what are they? They're just other bubbles in this thing. But look at this. Are the bubbles actually a thing? Are they actually real? No, they're just negative space. What's actually real, you might say, is the yellow substance, the foam. That's what's real. The bubbles are really just sort of illusions. There's no substance to the bubble. It's hollow. See? And moreover, all of the bubbles are really, what are they? Are they separate? No, it's the exact opposite. They're all unified. In fact, the space of all of these bubbles is the exact same space. It's one space. It's just emptiness. It's one emptiness. So, as I've said before in my episode about the radical implications of oneness, I said we're all one. Well, this explains why when I say we're all one, I'm not speaking metaphorically or poetically. Or I'm not saying some wishy-washy, new-agey platitude of like, oh yeah, we're all one, let's love each other. No. What I mean is very literally, physically. We're all one in the same way that all of these bubbles in this sponge are all one. And in fact, this entire sponge is just all one. But in order to realize that, you need to stop identifying with being one of these bubbles. And you need to realize that you are the entire thing. And not only are you the entire thing, but that the entire thing itself is also infinite. And if you grasp that, that is enlightenment. Enlightenment is going from believing that you're one of these bubbles to realizing that you're the entire sponge and that the entire sponge is infinite. And that this right here, this yellow sponge, this is God. This is what God is. This is what God consciousness is when you realize that you're this entire thing. And that is, believe it or not, actually possible to do. Now, of course, you probably won't do it in 5 minutes. You probably won't have this realization while you're sitting here listening to me, although you could. That's sort of the ideal scenario. But, you know, it usually takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of meditation, contemplation, psychedelics, and other things like that to help you to realize this. But this is what enlightenment is. This is what every mystical teaching and school and religion is pointing to, is it's pointing to this. But notice, because this thing, you know, it's so total and it's so vast and it's so epic and mind-blowing that it's really difficult to explain it to you, and that no analogy or metaphor really does justice to it. So don't take this foam example too literally, because of course there's limitations. You know, I'm limited to 3D space and time, and we're limited to language, which is necessarily dualistic, but you can grasp this in one go. You can just use your consciousness to directly realize that you're not perceiving the sponge, you are the entire sponge. And that, in fact, there is nobody who will perceive this sponge. There is only the sponge. There is only the external world, so to speak. There is no internal world. But really, that's the same thing as saying that the internal world and the external world, that they merge and collapse into one another, which is what non-duality is, right? It's the collapsing of all categories and distinctions, including the distinction between subject and object and inner and outer, internal and external, mind and body. So this is how we resolve the mind-body problem, you see? So we're going from the mind-body dualism of Descartes, and we're unifying it all into one field of consciousness. So let's try to get you to grasp this right now. Maybe you can get it. Maybe you can actually experience this shift. So do the following exercise. First of all, ground yourself in actuality. As I said in my What is Actuality episode, so pull out your hand, take out your hand like this, and actually look at your hand and realize here's the hand. And that this is actuality. Everything I've been talking about so far, all of that was just ideas, fantasies, and concepts and imagination. Ground yourself by looking at your hand at actuality. And notice what this is. This is part of this perceptual bubble that I've been talking about. Here it is, right? So I wasn't just talking about airy-fairy stuff. I'm pointing to something concrete. So find that thing that I'm pointing to. This is the visual field. Find it. Become conscious of it right now. Put your awareness on top of it right now. And now what I want you to realize, try to notice this, is that this is not biology. You are not a biological creature. This field is not some part of some biological creature that's coming from some brain somewhere. That's not what this is. Also notice that this visual field is not yours. You don't own it. It seems as though this field is your life. It actually constitutes your whole life. That's what you've believed your whole life. But try to unsee that right now. Try to look at your hand and look at it and see it as just an object floating out in the vacuum of empty space, like that meteor or that asteroid that was floating around 10 billion years ago. Try to see this hand that same way right now. And try to notice that there's no you here looking at the hand. What there is really is just a hand and its being. So depersonalize your experience of the you. Depersonalize all this. Try to not see this as your life or your emotions or your perceptions or your sensations, but that this is the external world right here. There's no external world somewhere else. The external world is not hidden from you. It's totally laid bare before your eyes. This is how the external world looks, or rather, not looks, but is. This is not you as a creature experiencing the external world. No. This is the raw, unmediated external world. You have full access to reality right now. This visual field that you have always thought is your biological, part of your biological creature stuff, this is not that. This is the raw fabric of the universe. Try to see it. That this literally is the universe, and here it is, it's existing. That means the universe has colors and shapes and smells and sounds and emotions and feelings and thoughts and ideas. And it can think and it can understand. That's not biology. That's the raw physical universe. It can do that. Now, of course, you're wondering now, but Leo, how is it possible that the fabric of the universe itself has all these things when these are all subjective qualities? Well, that's the mind fuck. You have to recontextualize that and realize that it's possible because here it is. It's always been possible. The only problem is that you have misinterpreted it your whole life, and you've always just assumed that these are all subjective properties, stuff that happens to biological organisms inside of brains. Just stop assuming that. You see, that was a groundless assumption. That was a bad assumption. Rather, what the raw universe is that it just is this. And it's not happening to you. It's happening to itself. It's happening without a you. It's always been happening without a you. The only time that you think it's happening to you is when you think it's happening to you. You see? You have to think that it's happening to me for it to actually appear as though it's happening to you. When you're not thinking about it, it's not happening to you. It's just there for itself. So try to get that right now if you can. If you succeed at this, what you're doing is you're stripping the you or the ego or the self away from this experience here. This changes the experience to not being an experience anymore, but to just being absolute being. Absolute being, or truth with a capital T. So what is truth with a capital T? It's this stripped of the you. Don't expect it to look different. Don't expect the colors to change. Don't expect the sounds and sights to change. Don't expect unicorns and angels and harps playing and the light of God shining down upon. Don't expect that stuff. None of that stuff will happen. What will just happen is that you will realize that there never was a you here, and that what this is just absolute pure truth, pure being. Can you get that? I mean, don't beat yourself up if you can't. This is very deep stuff. This takes a lot of focus and attention and contemplation to get. This is not something you get in 5 minutes. Which is not to say you should limit yourself. You certainly could get it in 5 minutes if your mind was very open. You might get a glimpse of it right now. Some of you will. Post me a comment down below if you do. But many of you won't. Many of you won't be able to break through. And that's okay. It's just you're going to have to work through it. You know, you can pause. You can rewind. You could try this exercise 100 times, and you probably will need to. And then one day you will break through and realize what I'm talking about and what's being pointed to. So this is why it's so difficult to realize God or to realize the absolute, is precisely because it's not different than what you've always been experiencing. It's just a reinterpretation, a very, very radical reinterpretation or recontextualization of what you've always been experiencing. And this is why they say that enlightenment is already here. This is why they say that you're already enlightened. This is why they say that there's nothing you can do to become enlightened. Because they're right in a sense, because there's only one thing happening here. The problem is that you're misinterpreting it. So what needs to change is your misinterpretation. You're sort of in this spell or in this illusion, and you need to break out of this illusion. And that's what we say waking up is. That's what we mean by waking up, is you wake up to the thing that was always here, but you just somehow misinterpreted. And why did you misinterpret it? Because of your drive to survive, your drive to live, and your fear of death, because you want you to survive. That's your number one priority in life, is to be you. So the reason that God is so difficult to realize, the reason enlightenment is so rare, is because you don't want to surrender the you. So it's not merely that you have to understand what I'm talking about here and be able to grok it. Before you can accomplish the grokking part, you first need to surrender a lot of your psychological fears. Because if you're doing this process correctly, you're going to start to feel your heart pound. You might start to experience a panic attack. You might get depressed. You might have some fit of anger. You might have some kind of egoic, knee-jerk reaction. That's right, because your mind doesn't play fair, because it wants you to survive. And survival is not about fairness, and it's not about truth. It's about lies and deception. So your mind is going to be working overtime right now to maintain the deception that you have been under your entire life, because your entire life hinges upon it. And if you were to realize what I'm saying here, that would be the end of you. You'd be dead. But of course, death here doesn't mean what you think it means. Death doesn't mean the cessation of perceptions and colors and stuff. It just means the elimination of the idea of you, which is what you have always been from the very beginning. It's just an idea. There's never going to be a physical death of you because that assumes that you were a physical object. But that was a false assumption. So there can be no physical death. The only thing there can be is a conceptual death. What you think of as physical death is actually conceptual death. And of course, you say, no, Leo, that can't be right. There actually is physical death. What is that but another concept? See? The mind traps itself with concepts, mistaking these concepts for physical reality. And that's why people are so touchy when we come and question their metaphysical beliefs or their religious beliefs or their scientific materialistic beliefs. Why is that? Because if we question it too much, it literally starts to pull apart their entire reality. And what they fear is not that reality will fall apart, although that is a certain fear that you can encounter. That's what I would call the fear of insanity, because when your reality starts to fly apart, you actually feel like you're going insane, and it feels very scary. But before you even get to that fear, there's going to be a more urgent and immediate fear, which is going to be a fear of death. And that's right. That's right. When you question reality deeply enough, you experience your own death. And then what remains is just this sponge floating out in empty space without a you anymore. You have realized that you're not one of these bubbles. So, really, your whole game in life is trying to maintain the sense that you're one of these bubbles. And as soon as you get anywhere close to realizing that you're not one of these bubbles, your ego goes crazy, hyper-reactive and emotional in order to distract you away from the truth and to drive you deeper into falsehood. And that's usually what most of your emotions do, most of the negative emotions, is they drive you deeper into the illusion that you're one of these bubbles. Pretty deep, huh? Yeah, pretty deep. I mean, we're explaining the mechanics of the entire game of life here. I mean, we're revealing the full Monty. We're spoiling it all for you here. Once you understand this and you get this at a cellular level, your life will never be the same again. This transforms your entire relationships to life and to human beings and to living creatures and non-living creatures and everything else. Now, you might still wonder, well, Leo, so it seems like you're saying that the universe is like self-aware. Is that what you're saying? Because if there's nobody to perceive this sponge, then how is it possible that it's being perceived? Like by who? By nobody? That means like it's perceiving itself, it's self-aware. But awareness is something that only living creatures can do. The universe can't be self-aware. That's impossible. No, it turns out that it actually is possible. You merely assumed that awareness is something that living creatures do, when in fact, there's no such thing as a living creature. Your mistake was coming up with this imaginary idea of a sentient living creature. There are no such things. That's a fiction. There are no such things, there never were such things, and you are not such a thing. So then you wonder, but how is it possible that there can just be awareness without a living creature? Well, I can throw the question back to you. How is it possible there can be an awareness with living creatures? I mean, no matter how you try to explain it or how you slice it, awareness is a very mysterious and weird thing. And that's precisely what science can't explain. Science and philosophers have been trying to explain what awareness is for thousands of years and have been very unsuccessful at it, especially in the Western intellectual tradition. And that's because awareness is not a thing, and it can't be explained, and it's irreducibly mystical and mysterious. You will never explain it, because it's the most fundamental thing. You can't get more fundamental than awareness. Awareness is not a property of biological creatures. It's not like rocks are not aware, but then one day when matter evolves into microbes and complicated creatures, then like fish and lizards are crawling over on land, and then you have rats and mice and stuff like this and mammals, that finally one of those, like the lizard, becomes aware. No. That's not how it works. Awareness isn't actually a thing. Technically speaking, awareness doesn't even exist. Awareness just is pure nothingness. It's a pure void or vacuum. Awareness is simply that in which the sponge is suspended. It's not a thing. Nobody has awareness. No brain produces awareness. Awareness is just nothingness. And so to even think that there is such a thing as awareness is already a mistake. Because usually when we think of awareness, we think of like some sort of field, and it's kind of mystical and weird and all this. No, awareness is not really that. It's just nothing. So imagine that there is some alternate universe in which awareness doesn't exist. In this universe, there are no living sentient creatures. In this universe, there are no internal worlds. There are no perceptions, no feelings, nothing. All there is in this universe are like facts. You might think of like objects, like a ball floating out in the middle of this universe, or a sponge floating out in the middle of the universe, or an asteroid or something like that. But there's nobody to perceive these things. So the collection of everything in that universe, this alternate universe, the collection of all the facts of that universe is what we call the truth, the ultimate absolute truth with a capital T. And there's nobody perceiving it or looking at it, but it's the truth because it just is. It's being. That asteroid, that ball, that sponge that's just floating out there, it's just there. You might think of it as just like a database with a bunch of entries. And you might think, well, that's kind of a boring universe. Nothing exciting can happen there. You can't have love. You can't have emotions or thoughts. You can't have knowledge. You can't have anything interesting. You can't have living creatures. So it's kind of this dead, stale universe. Well, what I'm describing, this alternate universe, is our present universe. That's exactly what's happening right now. Try to get this. Try to get it right now. Our entire universe consists of only one thing, the raw truth, the raw facts, the raw data. And that's what this is. All these colors and shapes, sounds, and everything else is just pure raw data happening to absolutely nobody, perceived by nobody, with no awareness. That's truth. But then you're going to wonder, but Leo, but if that's possible, then how come I'm perceiving it? That's your mistake, is you think you're perceiving it. But you might wonder, but Leo, how come the truth knows itself? How can the truth just be? How come it looks as though it's being awared? That's what truth is. Truth just is. It's pure isness. It's got nowhere else to go because it's the only thing that there is. It can't go anywhere, so here it is. And by virtue of this, it's self-apparent, or you might say self-aware. But you can see now we're getting into sort of paradoxical territory. Language is starting to break down as I'm talking about this. That's precisely because non-duality cannot be talked about with language, and it cannot be put into analogies and metaphors and concepts. So, you know, I'm doing the best that we can with language and with the limits of sponges and stuff. But you need to go beyond all of that to actually grasp what's being pointed at here. I'm not talking about beliefs. I'm not talking about ideas. I'm not talking about philosophy. I'm not talking about concepts. Look at actuality. Look at your hand. Look at what's happening around you. This is what I'm talking about. Pure truth. That's the only thing that's ever been here, is pure truth. Now, there's one final and ultimate objection that people have on this topic, which is, well, Leo, how do you explain that the brain affects perceptions? So, for example, if my brain is damaged, then maybe my visual cortex, let's say, is damaged, then I won't be able to see colors properly. Maybe I'll lose color vision. I'll start to see in black and white like a dog. So how do you explain that, Leo? Well, firstly, you have to understand that the brain is itself a perception. That's super important to understand. The mistake that neuroscientists and various philosophers in the West, materialists, have always made is that they have assumed that the brain is something other than a perception, something more fundamental, something more prior to perceptions. That is not the case. What we're doing here is we're putting the brain on the same level. We're bringing the brain up to the same level as all of the perceptions that we attribute to the brain, such that the brain itself is just one of the perceptions. So when you do that, the brain ceases to be or to have that same kind of explanatory causal power that it used to have. You can no longer use the concept of a brain to metaphysically ground the rest of reality and perception. But it's still nevertheless true that the brain, although it is a perception, it's a rather special perception. It's a perception that tends to have a global effect on all other perceptions if it's tweaked and changed in a certain way. So, for example, you can take a drug or a pill or a psychedelic, and that will change all of your perceptions. Now, of course, the psychedelic or the pill is itself a perception. So look what's happening. We're taking a pill, which is a perception. We're sticking inside our mouth, which is a perception. Then it's going through our blood. Blood is a perception. Then those chemicals are going inside our brain. Chemicals is a perception. Brain is a perception. So what we have here is how the entire universe works. It's a field of perceptions interacting with themselves in various ways. Sometimes perceptions can have local effects. Sometimes an interaction between two perceptions can have sort of a global effect, which is what would happen if your brain was damaged, let's say. And of course, how do you damage the brain? You take a perception, like a hammer, and you hit the back of the skull, which is also perception. And so, you know, perception affects perception affects perception. Of course, I'm using the word perception here, but there really is no perception. We're really talking about being. So we have being, which is interacting with other being. Being affects being, affects being, affects being. So it's really no different than the way that you think of how molecules interact. How is it possible that one molecule can hit another molecule, bounce off of it, and cause some kind of effect? Well, it's no different with perceptions. This one unified field of consciousness is self-interactive. It's not static like this sponge. It's constantly morphing and changing and twisting, and all sorts of super, super complicated stuff is happening inside of it all the time. These bubbles, they're not static. They're popping in and out of existence. That's what you would think of as your physical birth and death, these bubbles. So it's just like this bubbling, boiling, roiling soup of stuff that's just constantly happening. But from the vantage point of one of those bubbles, you know, it seems like 80 years, and it seems like this long life that you have with all these experiences and emotions and stuff. But that's just like one little blip on the radar screen of this entire infinite thing that's happening, you know. And it's going to happen forever. It's never going to get created or destroyed. It's just, it's constantly bubbling away like a lava lamp, and it'll bubble away for forever, for infinity. And it can do all sorts of very complicated things. It can create emotions. It can think. It can feel. It can make love. It can trick itself into thinking that it's seeing things. It can trick itself into thinking that it's a self and that it has a life and all of this. And that's what it is. This is God. This is everything. This is the ultimate self. This is the Buddha. This is Christ consciousness. This is everything. So in conclusion, what is perception really? Perception is actually being or absolute truth when properly interpreted. But most people on Earth misinterpret this because they have a sense of self. And so their sense of self co-opts absolute being and mistakes it for the self, mistakes it for my perceptions. And mistakes itself as being a sentient creature. But these sentient creatures aren't really real. They're just illusions, like negative sculptures in this one unified field. Now, of course, the final objection that people have when I talk about this is, but Leo, how do you know all this? How is this possible? How is it possible to know any of this? It seems like science fiction. It seems like a bunch of stuff that you just sat down one day and pulled out of your ass. Just stuff that you believe. Well, it's not that. It's possible for you to realize this. You can realize it. Because it's right here. Here it is. It's right here, right before your eyes. All you got to do is properly interpret what's right here, which mostly means shutting down your mind, becoming very, very focused on the present moment, and just sitting there in meditation with a very quiet and focused one-pointed mind, and doing that hour after hour, day after day, week after week, for months and for years, until finally it clicks. You can't make it click. It will click on its own. But what you can do to sort of make it click is put in the work of sitting there, quieting your mind, and meditating, contemplating, or there are various other techniques, doing yoga, or that shamanic breathing technique, that could help, or psychedelics. That's very, very powerful and would really help you to understand this. You know, if you really want to get a lot of this episode, try watching it or listening to it, not during your trip, but right before your trip. And then contemplate about this, maybe do some of these exercises that I showed you in the middle of your trip, and then you'll get it. And then you'll see just how profound this all is. So there you go. We've explained perception, and we've resolved the many thousands years old mind-body problem. It's done. It's simple. The solution is very simple. I'm not the first person to have discovered it for sure, so I don't take any special credit here. I'm just explaining in a way that I think would be would resonate with people in the 21st century. That's all I'm doing. That's all actualize.org is it's me basically taking timeless truths that have been known for over 5,000 years by mankind. Pretty much everything I've talked about has been known by mankind for centuries. And I'm just popularizing it. I'm just communicating it in a way that works with youngsters on YouTube, and which is kind of hip and modern, and which integrates a lot of stuff together, and just which isn't talked about in mainstream culture very much. That's it. And if you were lucky enough to stumble upon this, then here you are, and that's why you know about it. Whereas 99% of people are not going to watch my stuff, and they're never going to sit through a hour-long, two-hour-long video week after week, or to seriously do the practices to realize this stuff. That's it. That's it. What makes this stuff so challenging is that it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work, and it's emotionally difficult. You are intimately involved with this inquiry. It's not like you can just sit on a couch and navel gaze and just philosophize idly. No, like when you're doing this right, what's going to happen is you're going to realize that your entire emotional system, all of your deepest fears and problems and all of your anger and anxiety, all of that is deeply connected. All of your inadequacies as a human being, all of the challenges and problems you have in your life, all the suffering, all of that is deeply connected to this entire inquiry, which is why this inquiry is so life-changing. Because if you go through this whole process, it will transform your entire life. Every corner of it will get transformed. Because what we're talking about here is transforming your entire perceptual system. Literally, the doors of your perception will be cleansed. And what you will be left with, as William Blake said so eloquently, is the infinite. You will realize that you are the entire universe. The entire universe is this thing that's here right now. This is it. You're the whole shebang. You're not just some little object in the universe. You are the whole universe. But to realize that will be an ordeal for you. You see? Because even though it might sound like a kind of a pretty and a nice truth, it is. It's very pretty. It's hauntingly beautiful, and it's profound beyond description, and it produces feelings and emotions of joy and bliss that you can't even imagine your wildest imagination. Joy and bliss beyond that of a heroin high. But to get there, you must go through all of your fears, through all of your neuroses, through all of your hang-ups, through all of your egoic quirks. You must surrender your arrogance. You must surrender your judgment. You must surrender your demonization of others. You must open your mind very, very radically, and you must ultimately lay down your entire life as a self, as an ego, to eventually break through and have this awakening. And then you will have your bliss. So the end result of cleansing the doors of your perception is the most amazing joy that you could ever imagine. But the process of cleansing the doors of your perception is some of the greatest hell and struggle that you could possibly imagine. So that's why so few people do it. And what I encourage for you is that you make a commitment in your life to do it. You will never regret doing it. And you will never know what you missed unless you do it. And what you will miss will be the greatest thing ever. So great that it's impossible to put into words. And that's what motivates me to talk about these topics in such length and depth, is because it just gives me joy to know that one or two people will get it. Out of the thousands and millions that watch, one or two will get it. And they will have that kind of profound joy, that metaphysical joy of discovering their full infinite nature, having cleansed the doors of their perception. That's it. I'm done here. Please remember to click that like button and come check out actualize.org. We've got a blog. We've got a forum. We've got resources like book lists and life purpose courses and other courses that I'll be releasing in the future and some other ideas that I have planned coming up soon. So keep abreast of all of that. If you have questions, come interact on our forum and just ask there. We have some people that can help you figure stuff out. And the last thing that I'll say here is what actualize.org is I'm trying to create a comprehensive catalog of the deepest explanations of life that I wish existed when I was young, when I was a teenager, when I was in my early 20s, because I had all these deep, profound questions about life, like, what is perception? What is consciousness? What is awareness? Does God exist? Why is there something rather than nothing? Where did the universe come from? What is all this stuff? What is happiness? How do I become happy? Why do I suffer? How can I eliminate my suffering? How can I be a good human being? And so forth and so forth. So all these questions I had, I was just passionate about figuring them out. And so I spent decades trying to figure all this stuff out. And the more I researched it and the more I figured out, the more amazed I was at why this stuff wasn't talked about everywhere. Because this is the most amazing stuff. This is what life is about, is figuring this stuff out and then crafting a life around this, around these answers. And so it was always just mind-blowing to me that there weren't videos about this. Why aren't there? Why am I one of the first people releasing videos like this? Like, it honestly, it still baffles me. But of course, you know, I also understand why it's not done. It's, these are challenging ideas. They're challenging to communicate. They're challenging to study. They require radical open-mindedness to understand. They require enormous work to actualize, to glimpse, let alone to master all these ideas. So there's just so much here. You know, there's so much that goes into creating a great life, to being a great human being. Because as it turns out, you're not just trying to become a great human being. You're realizing that you are the entire universe. See, and that's a big project. To go from being a tiny little human being, what you thought you were when you were born, to realizing that you're this infinite universe God thing, you know, that's like night and day. You're basically going from zero to infinity. That's a hell of a ride, a hell of a gear shift to go through. And that's not easy to do. You have to go through so many challenges. But what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create this catalog. So I'm trying to create these various episodes that address very fundamental questions like, what is consciousness? What is intelligence? What is God? What is enlightenment? What is, in this case, perception, and so forth and so forth. So in the future, you'll see more of these sorts of what is episodes that tackle very fundamental metaphysical questions. But there will also be a lot of practical stuff that I'll release in the future as well. So I'm kind of going through this phase where I'm addressing a lot of this kind of metaphysical stuff, and you might think it's not too practical for you because you're chasing success. Okay, that's fine. I understand that. But bear with me. You know, I'm going to release these. Then we're going to get back into practical psychological type stuff. I'm going to help you to figure out how to be more confident, how to have higher self-esteem, how to attract friends into your life, how to be more social, how to be more confident, how to be more charismatic. So all that stuff, we'll get to it. You know, we'll get to it. One of the things that I'm most passionate about, though, is the very metaphysical stuff, because like this is the stuff that has sort of motivated my entire journey. And so without these questions, really, there wouldn't be an actualized.org. So that's why I cover some of these sorts of very nerdy, you might think, kind of esoteric, philosophical type topics. And also because there's a deep lack of videos talking about this stuff at the level of depth that I think is required to really understand this stuff. There's just a lack of this information. You know, maybe in 200 years that problem will be solved. But right now, I feel like it's sort of my duty to solve this problem. That's sort of my purpose here, is to be a solution to this lack that exists in society. And so, you know, over the years, that's sort of what I'm angling at, is creating this catalog. We're going to have hundreds of these videos that explain all of these topics. And then my hope is that that transforms someone's life, somebody like you. So stick around and maybe that'll happen.